¿Quieres pedo, güey? No, chale.
Chale, chale, chale.
¿Quieres pedo? No, chale.
Chale.
Ya sabes que a mí me vale.
Me vale.
¿Quieres pedo? No, chale.
Chale.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast today. Today's special guest is NBA player Tracy Murray. Tracy is a really good friend of mine and is a really big wrestling fan. In fact, I first met him backstage at a wrestling event in Toronto, I believe. Growing up in California, of course, I'd heard of Tracy Murray because he was such a basketball high school legend. At one time, he was the California all-time leading scorer. And after high school, he went to UCLA where he just tore it down and shot the lights out and became an NCAA legend. And then on to the pros where he has a championship ring and also a 50-point NBA game. 50 points. In one game in the NBA against the best players in the entire world. Such an accomplishment. Like I said, Tracy is a good friend of mine, loves wrestling, is always backstage at the wrestling events, is really good friends with a lot of the wrestlers, and really knows his wrestling in and out. So today I bring to you Tracy Murray. So what's going on, man? How you been?
Man, I've been good, man. It's good to be on here with you, brother.
Yeah, nah, thanks for doing this, man. You're out in Vegas right now, huh?
Yeah, out here. My wife is teaching, so
Oh, nice.
Normally we had to go back to Chino Hills for about 3 weeks, and then the Chino Unified decided to let them go back and teach from home again. So I was like, okay, back to Vegas we go.
Yeah. I guess they're going to be coming back to in classroom soon, right?
Well, that was the plan, and that's why she started in the classroom, but then they pushed it back to like 2021. At least that's what we think.
I know it changes daily. My wife's a teacher also, and she's actually starting. She has students next week or the week after. You know, it changes every day, but yeah, she's getting students, man.
Wow. I mean, you know, that's a good start, you know, to be able to come back to some type of normalcy, man, where people can come back in. I mean, because out of everybody that's getting cheated, man, the kids are getting cheated because they're not being able to socialize. And that's tough on them.
For sure. And they're all becoming really good at cheating, you know, with the internet and all that kind of stuff right there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that and not being able to see their friends. I mean, that's where we're, you know, they're suffering. But then they also get bored in front of the computers. Like I catch my 6-year-old sometimes just playing and just turning around like this. And I'm like, Tiana, you got to look straight. You got to listen to your teacher.
They can barely keep their attention span in front of the teacher, let alone on a computer.
Right. You know right. And then try an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. And they're in separate rooms, and I'm going back and forth while my wife is teaching in another room. So, so much for the golf game.
Oh man, you're killing me with that, man. I miss it too right now. It's been too hot. Well, like everything's shut down. So when it shut down, my golf game just went to crap because I wasn't playing at all. Then it started opening back up. Like, all right, let's start playing a little bit. And you know, like we've played before, it's one of those that. You know, the first nine's getting warmed up. Second nine, my body starts moving and start playing a little bit better. But it's been so hot right now. It's like, oh man, we got to get up there really, really early or like a twilight.
Right. Absolutely. And same out here in Vegas. And really LA has been hotter than Vegas lately. And you know,
crazy,
man. I mean, 121 in Woodland Hills. Who would have thought, you know,
I have no idea. I mean, that's insane. We're 110 out here, and that's super hot for us. And I'm 4 or 5 miles from the beach, and that's insanely hot. You know, it can get to, you know, 95, okay, whatever, but 110, like all my plants are dying. I was spraying them down with water and they're dying.
I know. It's just a different look for anything near the water. You know, usually you can count on that to be a little bit cooler, but it's been scorching out there.
Yeah, you know what? I'm like I said, close to the beach, and the beach is usually about 10 degrees cooler than I am. At the beach, it was 95 degrees. It was crazy.
Yeah, and when I do go out there and golf, and I usually go see my boy Troy Grant. He helps me with my swing from time to time, and he's out at a Long Beach. Okay. And it's normally real cool out there, and he said it's been up out there. So I can imagine what he's doing over there with you.
It's a hot one, man. But you're a Cali boy, man, growing up in Glendora.
Oh, yeah. You know, Pasadena boy, went to Glendora High. Yeah, you know, family moved to Laverne before moving to Vegas. My brother's still in Upland. I go back and forth. So, I'm just because I'm gone, it doesn't mean I left. You know, I'm still there. I work there, so there's a lot going on still in Cali.
Well, you're that Cali legend, man. We'd all heard about you, you know, before I'd ever met you. Where you know, growing up a basketball fan and a basketball player as a kid, you know, we all knew Glendora and Tracy Murray, the Murray brothers, and all the other ones that were there. But finally meeting you at backstage and you being a wrestling fan, I was like, wow, all right, this is awesome. Man, he's tall.
Well, shoot, come on, man. I mean, we felt the same way about the Guerreros. You know, I grew up a wrestling fan, and my cousin Gavin, who God rest his soul, you met him a few times. He was born with spina bifida. He's the reason why I got into wrestling. And I miss sitting up there with him talking wrestling, talking about the Monday Night Wars, because you guys were huge in the Monday Night Wars. And it was a great time for wrestling. It was a great time to be around it. I really enjoyed meeting you guys and then becoming brothers. And God bless Eddie, Miss Eddie.
Right.
I'll never forget where I was in 2005. I was in Thessaloniki, Greece, playing for Pauk. There were 10 others that passed at that same time, like within.
Oh, yeah.
Like 10, 12 days of each other. And then Eddie was the last straw, bro. It's like, when he went, I remember, and I've told you the story before, where I'm laying there stretching with my team, and my back is on the floor. I'm looking up at the ceiling of the arena. I have my knees to my chest, and I'm stretching. And then all of a sudden, just tears just start streaming down my eyes, bro. And it was like, it was just too much. It was too much that happened at that time. Eddie was the last straw. Eddie, man, I tell you, that was a special dude, man. He was a cool, cool brother.
It was different for me because he was my brother, literally, and close to him. But I see what you're saying, because recently we had, the great one, Kobe, passed away. And it affected me, man. And literally being a huge Kobe fan and a Laker fan and growing up here in Southern California, Kobe was everything, such a big in the community and, great with the kids and just
especially in your area.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Newport Beach area. He's, known. Our good friend, we used to see him at the grocery store, and it was just Kobe just hanging out, So to have him pass away like that, not different levels, but at the same time, I feel it, man. It was like, God, like it really affected me. Like when I heard of his passing, I was just in shock and kind of for a day or two, kind of like, what just happened? Like, does this really happen? Is Kobe gone? And oh man, just really affected me.
Yeah. I mean, when people hit you in a certain way, they impact your life and impact you, and you have good times with these people and they become a part of your life. And then now all of a sudden they're gone. It's just a tough thing. Like yesterday was my brother Sean Rook's birthday, and he passed in 2016. And talking about hanging, I mean, we were really brothers, man. It's like
I saw that,
man. It just
I saw your post.
Yeah, it's just something that I you can't let go to people that you love, man. It's just tough.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know how big he was. I knew he was big, but
6'11", and he hung out in Orange County area too.
Yeah,
he was always at Newport Beach playing on the beach courts over there, and we played in a lot of leagues together. We worked out together while in the NBA. We played against each other when he was at Arizona and I was at UCLA, and he went to Fontana High when I was at Glendora High. So we've been knowing each other since 85. And, you know, so, I mean, this goes back to high school. And then, you know, to remain close through all of those years and then all of a sudden to lose him. And then we coached together at the Bakersfield Jam D-League team before it became G-League and before all the NBA teams had affiliates. We were coaching together with my college coach, Jim Herrick. So we went through the coaching thing together. You know, we went through, you know, we always celebrate each other's birthdays and showed up at each other's parties. And we were at each other's house all the time. His son and daughter, Cam and Kayla, they're like my niece and nephew. It's just tough, man. It's just tough losing him.
Yeah, man, that's tough. That's tough to hear.
Yeah.
Shifting a little bit, obviously you're a tall kid growing up. Did you grow up playing basketball?
Yeah, I grew up, my dad told me this story. He used to roll me to the gym in a stroller and put me in a corner. And I would start crying. And, you know, I wouldn't shut up. And then what happened was the ball that they were playing with, they gave me the ball. And that shut me up. So I think my dad knew something then. I was infatuated with the game in a stroller. And then I was his shadow. Every time he went to the gym, I went to the gym. You know, he took me with him. And I think I started in basketball camps at 5, 6 years old. And you know, it was the only game I really loved. I played baseball. I was a good pitcher. I couldn't hit the ball. But once I got hit with that ball, it was a wrap.
Those things hurt, man.
I was too tall. I was too tall and wasn't big enough to play football. You know, they would have been cutting at my knees, and that wouldn't have been good for me. But basketball was it. You know, that was my love.
Yeah. When did you realize that you were better than everybody else?
Well, early in basketball camps, I grew up in Michael Cooper and Michael Holton's basketball camps in Pasadena because, of course, they're Pasadena products. They were blessed and fortunate enough to make it to the NBA as well. So when you learn from a good family like my family, my dad and my uncles, and they were all like right in the semi-pro area when it comes to basketball. But then, you know, my dad used to, you know, babysit Michael Cooper when he was young. So so passing the ball, man. When you learn from greats like Coop and Michael Holton, who played in the league for many years too, UCLA alum, you learn right from them and you soak it up like a sponge. I was pretty good as a kid. When I got to 14, eighth grade, I was starting to, you know, make a name for myself. And then all of a sudden, my hip starts bothering me. I'm wondering what it is. I can't pronounce the term of it. It was like my hip was starting to slip because I grew 5'10 to 6'4 in that summer months from eighth to ninth grade year. So it was a major growth spurt that I went
through. How much did you grow?
From 5'10 to 6'4 in 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah, I did a lot of sleeping that summer. It was a ton of sleeping that summer. All I did was sleep and play.
Are you on drugs? That's what I think about. Are you on drugs?
They stretched me out. You know what I'm saying? but my body was not taking that well. Just being a wrestler and being an athlete, that your core is very important to your body development.
For sure.
I was a chubby kid. So, and chubby, big, slow. They used to call me corn fed, all of that, you know, and I didn't have a strong core. So my hip started growing outside the socket and I didn't have a core to support the growth. So they cut the curve part out and in place, they put 8 screws in place and my bone had to mend back together. So yeah, my left leg was a little bit shorter than my right leg, but I probably would have been about 6'8", 6'9", you know, 6'8.5", 6'9", if I still had everything right. But they told me I'd never play again. And then I met this wonderful doctor. I even went down to Andrews and he told me, you know, this was a long time ago. It was before, really? Before the hip was a problem. It was way before then. But right here in, you know, in Los Angeles, California, you know, Children's Hospital, Dr. Stanford Noel, man, he said he, you know, he'll fix me up and get me back right. And this was after like six doctors who told me I'll never play again.
This is an Andrew fix right here. This bicep.
Yeah.
He fixed that.
Yeah. You
still got a, I still got a sore scar. Let me see. Where's that scar at? Right. big old zipper right there. That's an Andrew fix.
Yeah. I know. I mentioned Andrews because, you know, he's the best. And you guys go to Andrews all the time. It's like everybody that gets, you know, has to have a surgery in wrestling to go right down to Andrews. So I just knew that he was the best. And this was back when I was in eighth grade. And this was something he had never seen before. You know, something different. So
you missed your freshman year, right?
Yes, I missed my freshman year of high school. I came back my sophomore year at 6'5", in which, you know, at that time, I had lost whatever traction that I had gained. It's almost like starting over again. Everybody that I was better than was ranked ahead of me, you know, so I had a major chip on my shoulder. And I came back that year, averaged about, you know, between 25 and 28 points a game my sophomore year. And then that summer, you know, it was like being reintroduced back to AAU again. Mm-hmm. And I was figuring that out, had a good summer, went back the next year, my junior year, averaged 31 a game, went into that summer. We went to Nike camp, and it's an East Coast bias camp. I was put on a team full of East Coast guys. No one knew my game. I didn't know their game. Didn't have a good camp. Now they said the West Coast was a disappointment. And Ed O'Bannon played with Kenny Anderson. So he came out of that camp. Ed came out of that camp, you know, highly ranked. And he was supposed to be the best guy on the West Coast, you know, because he played with a great guard that knows how to play.
He's younger than you, right?
Yes.
Ed's a little younger than you, that's right.
He's a year younger. And with all of us coming back, you know, and all of us, quote unquote, were disappointments except for Ed, you know I had a chip on my shoulder. And, you know, and I came back that season and my dad said, okay, you messed up in Nike camp. You did well in AAU. You're ranked around 80-something. You're trying to be a McDonald's All-American. This is what you're going to have to do if you're going to get there. You're going to have to average over 40 points a game. You're going to have to lead the nation in scoring. You're going to have to be California State Player of the Year. You're going to have to be Regional Player of the Year. And then maybe they'll consider you for McDonald's All-American and get to the state championship and win it. So I did almost all of it except for the state championship and win it. I got there, but we lost it. Mm. I averaged over, 44.3 points a game, close to 45, 14 rebounds a game. I led the nation in scoring. And then I ended up making the McDonald's All-American team, which is definitely an honor, being one of the top 24, 25 players in the nation.
Right. And California all-time leading scorer at a time, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And then only playing 3 years.
I had to do all of it. 3 years.
And only playing 3 years. That's insane.
Oh, if I had that fourth year, no one would have touched it.
I know. Who is it now? Who's the leading scorer now?
Not sure. I know at one point it was Casey Jacobson, myself, and my brother. And we all went to Glendora High. And we all played for Coach Mike Leduc.
Oh, my God.
If you can score, Coach Mike Leduc will put you in a position where you can score a lot of points. He knows and he'll put you in position. Even through triangle twos, boxing ones, trick defenses, he'll find a way to put you in position to, you know, to succeed because he wants to win. So he'll find a way to use your talents to win. I mean, I look at what my brother did, and, you know, he did it in 4 years and he was number two and he was a point guard. And, you know, I'm like, dude, why didn't you just go ahead and just take it? You know, but he averaged over 20-something a game in high school at his freshman year on up. So, I mean, he was California State Player of the Year, co-player of the year with with Charles O'Bannon, his sophomore year.
The younger brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So, you know, my brother did, you know, pretty much eclipsed everything I've done, too. It's just he was shorter.
Yeah. And then UCLA.
Right. Now, and that was interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure you were recruited by everybody. What made you go to UCLA?
oh man, that, as I say again, man, that process was, it kind of played itself out. Like I wanted to go to Arizona at first because they were the very first ones to send me a letter and recruit me. God rest Lute Olson's soul. He just passed away. And we used to laugh and joke about that. Yes, Hall of Famer, legend.
Of course.
You know, whenever I went to back to broadcast over the last 11 years back to Arizona, I would always find him out of the crowd and go say hello and talk about it. We'd laugh about old times. But I wanted to go there because Wayne Womack was my best friend, and he went to John Muir, and we were really close growing up in Pasadena. So I wanted to go there with him. I would have gone there with Sean Rooks, you know, so it would have fit me pretty good, but they called me, Kevin O'Neill was the assistant, and he called me and said they couldn't recruit me anymore. So that eliminated Arizona altogether before I even narrowed down my five. Really? You know, so my five was New Mexico because I liked Scott Duncan, was a great recruiter, and Dave Bliss was going to let me just do my thing, and I was going to be playing with Luke Longley. So that was like the long shot, go there, you know, put up numbers and leave and play with a great center. Villanova was my fourth. I loved Rolly Massimino.
Yeah, they were a powerhouse at that time. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. He has a national championship, God rest his soul, too. And it was fashionable back then to go to the Big East for if you're a Western player. Do you go to the Big East and you get your respect? That's if I was going to do that. The third one was Louisville. Coach Crum, UCLA alum, wooden disciple. At the time, Allen Houston, I didn't know until the recruitment started. Allen Houston is my cousin. And and Wade Houston, his dad, was the assistant. So when he left to go to Tennessee and Allen went with him to Tennessee, I was like, well, I'm not going to Tennessee. I don't know anything about Tennessee. So that kind of eliminated Louisville. And then it was down to UNLV and UCLA. And UNLV,
was great UNLV relationship. At Powerhouse already with Burkanium?
Yes, yes. I grew up with Stacey Augman. Stacey Augman and Wayne Womack played on the same team. It would have been the high school I would have went to if I stayed in Pasadena, John Muir. So I grew up with Stacey Augman. That's another person I was real comfortable with going and playing with. They had Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony and Anderson Hunt and all these guys. I mean, it was a powerhouse. Yeah. You know, they won in 91. So I went to their their team camps every
Duke
summer.
Oh, man, that was huge.
Yeah. You know, I went to their team camps every summer. So I Tarkanian coached my dad in junior college. So it was everything was pointing to UNLV. I was about ready to sign to go to UNLV. And then the infamous picture of the, you know, the players with the mobster in the hot tub. And then they went on probation soon after. So that left standing UCLA. And I've always loved UCLA anyway. You know, the tradition is second to none without how many NBA players come out of there and the education and all of that, where it was located. Staying home, you know, parents being able, my brother being able to come to the games and watch, and I would still be able to support my brother and go to his games. It worked itself out.
And then UCLA, you played 3 years. You left. Yeah. You left for your senior year. You didn't stay. You joined the draft. But in 3 years, led the Pac-10 in 3-point shooting with 50%. What are you? That's insane. 50% 3-point shooting average? That's unheard of.
Well, what was crazy about that year, Chavo, was I was on the Pan American team that summer, the 91 Pan American team, and Jimmy Jackson breaks his – if he doesn't break his leg, get a stress fracture, we win the gold. No question in my mind. But he gets hurt, which was a crucial part of what we were doing. Gene Cady, who was the coach, relied a lot on Jimmy Jackson. So he didn't groom anybody else to step up and be in that position to feel comfortable enough to play their game and win. So we end up losing to Puerto Rico, end up getting a bronze. I mean, we were undefeated up until that game. Right. And then we lose that game, and then we get a bronze. We don't even get a silver. We get a bronze. And then all of a sudden, in comes Dream Team 1 next year because we messed up. And but that experience of playing with Jimmy, Walt Williams, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, all of the top guys in college that year. I thought they should have had Shaq on the team. I don't know what happened between Shaq and USA Basketball at the time, but being part of
He got dissed a couple of different times. He didn't even make the dream team. They brought Leitner instead of him. And I mean, nothing against Leitner, of course, but it was Shaquille O'Neal, you know.
Right.
And he didn't make the dream team. And I mean, he got dissed a couple times. And no wonder I think that's what happens is when good players become great, like yourself, is that you get that chip on your shoulder and you're out to prove something. You're going to go out there and start going. And then he became, you know, Shaq Diesel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It created a major chip on his shoulder. He felt disrespected. Mm-hmm. So being able to play with those guys, it gave me a different confidence. You know, I knew I was amongst the college elite going into my last year.
Right.
And, you know, especially being the youngest guy on that team and getting a little bit of time and then, you know, being selected and going into that year, the next year, I felt like I was one of the best in the nation. So I played like it.
That's awesome, man. Relate that to wrestling. It's kind of the same thing in the sense that you grew up playing with all of these guys that you played against in the NCAA, you know, tournament and stuff, mm-hmm. Leitner and Grant Hill and the people you're talking about. So you guys knew each other pretty well. It's not like all of a sudden you just saw, you know, you just faced each other twice on whether it be in the tournament or during the season. Yeah. You knew these guys, you knew their game, you knew what they were about, everything, and vice versa.
Yeah, definitely. Especially, you know, coming up in the AAU circuit, you know, you play against everybody. I played against all of these top guys, you know, all of those top guys coming out of New York, Kenny Anderson, Jamal Mashburn, Conrad McRae, Jamal Faulkner, all those guys knew about me because we played against each other every summer. You know, Brian Reese, Adrian Autry. I mean, there were some great basketball players coming out of New York at that time. And, you know, if you wanted any type of respect, you got to make your name on New York, or you got to make your name on the Jimmy Jacksons and the Lawrence Funderburks of the world at the time that was in our class. You know, Aaron Bain, George Lynch. These are guys that were McDonald's All-Americans, and you have, you know, if you face them, you got even, you know, facing Allen Houston, who was my cousin. I mean, I gave Kentucky 50 in the AAU tournament in Las Vegas. You know, you got to play well against these big name guys if you're going to be considered for anything.
You know, that's cool. Just learning about with pro athletes, we definitely have the respect for other pro athletes in other sports. And you and I have talked about this before.
Absolutely.
But it's very relatable, even though I've never been that in, you know, an NBA pro athlete. It's all very, very
similar. Stop it.
It's all very similar, but it's the same thing to where we're all, you know, respect each other in that sense, but it's very the same trials and tribulations, you know.
Well, that's why I said stop it. Let's parallel this to what you did. Okay, you were in the NBA for your level of what you were doing.
True, very true.
I'm not trying to hear that, Chavo. You're at the top, brother.
You're right.
Yeah. So but you're absolutely right. We paralleled, and we understand, and we respect all athletes because we're all doing it on that level, the top level. And it's tough, you know, it's tough staying on top and on that level for a certain amount of time because you got so many people nipping at your heels.
Yeah, you know? Everybody is trying to get a piece of you and knock you off your pedestal.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
What you do one day, and I remember Vince McMahon telling me this. I came out and we had I don't know if it was Russ and Ray or something, and we came out of the pay-per-view match and just tore it down, man. We had an awesome match, and he looks at me and goes, man, you guys, you heard his voice, you guys tore it down. That was incredible. And I'm like, oh, hey, thanks, Vince. It's awesome. And then all of a sudden he goes, but you have all these medals on your chests. When you wake up in the morning, they're all gone and you have to do it again. And I was like, God, he's right. You're only as good as your next match because your last is done. It's over. You're only as good as what you're going to do tonight or tomorrow. That's it.
Consistency is the key. And you got to be consistently good every night to maintain your level in whatever business that you're in, especially in the sports world. And you have to stay healthy too. You know, that's the key.
And it's not just staying healthy because how often did you play 100%? It doesn't happen very
often.
You're always injured. I was injured for 18 straight years. I always say that. You're playing to be the best on your worst day. That's what absolutely. I say, and it's a quote that I stole from somebody, but definitely you're playing to be the best on your worst day, because you're never 100% healthy. We go out there and we play. We always playing at, you know, 70, 75%. If we're lucky, we're in the 92, 93 percentile, but that doesn't happen very often.
Right, right. And it's like we always, the trainer always said, are you hurt or are you injured? Because it's a difference.
Difference.
We all played hurt. You know,
that's right.
Hurt is, you know, you go out there and you perform at the highest level. You may not feel good. You may be sick. You may be hurt, but you're still at the high level. You're doing your thing. You get through it on to the next match. If you're injured, that just means you cannot go. You've broken your arm or your leg or something, and you absolutely cannot go. And looking at the NBA today, and you're looking at, you know, players sitting out, you know, I'm like, they wouldn't allow me to sit out back in the day. I was a worker.
That was wrestling, bro.
Yeah, it's like
there was no sitting out, man.
Me and you both. We were worker bees. We weren't the franchise.
That's right.
You know, and it's like the franchise. A nail comes off. You know, a nail. You know, and it starts bleeding. Okay, you can take, you know, 3 days off because they invested a lot of money in those guys.
Right.
Us?
No.
Get your ass back out there and play. Or get your ass back out there in the ring and then get to work. You know, and it's like we didn't have that luxury. So at one point, I was number two behind AC Green when it came to games played consecutively because, you know, I took pride in coming to work. I took pride in playing through. And when you do that, you're not only playing through injuries.
But not a virgin like AC.
No.
Hats off to AC. I love AC, but we're always
saying,
was a virgin all through his NBA career and stuff, and that was his thing. He's like, he was waiting for the right girl. That's awesome.
Explained how strong he was.
Man, did not kid, man. That guy is stronger than all of us. I think that's what happens though with professional athletes, that as long as we parlay that correctly, we get successful in other things other than sports because we know what it takes to be successful in our sport and how much you have to grind and just push and keep going for years and years and years, that we're able to parlay that into business or, you know, whether it be, you know, whatever, it's something else. But I think that's why we continue to stay successful in other businesses and other aspects of our lives.
Yeah, because it doesn't stop, especially when you're in our era, in our area of the worker bee area, because we got to work for the rest of our lives. We're not the ones that have that contract where we can go retire and kick our feet up and play golf every day.
We can't
do that. We got to parlay this into something else so we can have a comfortable lifestyle for our family. You know, it doesn't stop for us. And so that we're able to keep working into different areas.
And then you look at those guys that, you know, guys like The Rock and Cena, that they have been the guy and they're able to sit back. If they want, they can sit back and relax. But no, they're still pushing and still pushing. It's the same work ethic that we have. Those guys just keep going because of the fact that they want to strive to be the best. And it sometimes becomes a bit of an addiction, but we have to like balance that a little bit with, okay, let me be the best, but now let me sit on my couch and be the best at chilling out, you know?
Right. And you know, and that's that obsessive drive that the Cenas and the Rocks have. Right. That was Kobe and Mike. That was Kobe and MJ. Okay. That obsessive, I want to be the best. I'm going to be a workaholic, even though I have all this talent. And they're just different. They're different than everybody else.
Well, I remember.
You're right about us, though.
Yeah.
You're right about us. You know,
I remember
like
Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, I remember Isaiah Thomas. And I remember him talking about that, how good he was. He said that his brother was more talented than him, but just didn't have his work ethic. Mm-hmm. That he just didn't. This is something that I had heard him in an interview. He said, my brother was better than me, but he just didn't have the work ethic, wasn't there to keep pushing and keep striving. So you got guys like Jordan and Kobe and LeBron, and they have that talent and that work ethic that makes them the upper echelon of all time, you know?
I have that in my family. My brother was the more talented, the better player. I admit it. Cameron Murray was better than me. I had the size. I was always told I couldn't. I wasn't able to. I'm not going to make it. So I had an extra chip on my shoulder in which I always had to work.
Right.
It came natural to him. Everything was, when it's that natural to you, then you feel like you can balance things and do other things and not focus on that. And then where he felt, and he'll tell you to this day, he'll tell you, he tells us AAU program this all the time. Mm-hmm. Is where he fell short at was where I was focused. He was out, you know, trying to party and chase girls and stuff like that, to where I stayed focused on what my goal was. And right. he tells our kids that all the time. And we try to teach our AAU teams based on our mistakes. And he's 100% real with them all the time.
Yeah, thank God I didn't party and chase girls. No, man, you know, and we back to what you were saying a little bit before I cut you off. We're kind of the same in the sense that we balance our jobs with our family life.
Yeah.
And we work, and you and I have talked about this on the phone, we work to that we can hang out with our families. That's why I do what I do still, is that I can go, you know, take a vacation when I want, you know, have a nice house, a nice roof over my head, go out to sushi when I want, that kind of stuff. That's why we keep doing what we do, you know?
Right, absolutely. And I realized something when I got to the NBA at 20 years old. I realized the NBA is not real basketball. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is when there's money involved, there's politics.
Oh, yeah.
They have in their mind, the owners have in their mind of who they think that can put asses in seats, who they can sell merch and jerseys and stuff like that. So when that is all figured out and you finally understand that, then it's like, okay, this is the box I'm in. I got to maximize this box if I'm going to last long in this league. Or if I try to fight that and still try to knock one of those stars off the top, I'm not going to last very long because that star is going to say, I don't like playing with this dude and I'm going to be up out of there. So
very much like wrestling. You figure very
that.
Much.
Yeah. It's in parallel throughout every sport, anything that, even in corporate America is the same way. You know, you got those that are right up underneath the boss. The boss believes that they can push whatever product that they're selling. And then all of a sudden this guy, hungry guy underneath is trying to pull that guy down. And this guy goes and tells the boss, hey, this guy is not cooperating, and then they get rid of him. It's the same thing across the board. So it's like, okay, I am in this box. I'm not here to be the best in the world or one of the best on the team. So I'm going to continue to work on my game, continue to be a workaholic I am, but then try to enjoy it a little bit better and try to get my family to understand that this is what it is. It's not going to change. So get off my back because I understand what it is. And I'm trying to get you to understand what it is. And then we can all enjoy the experience a little bit more than just being miserable up in it. And you're grinding and you're just constantly running your head into a wall.
Right, right. It's that we're in for the long haul as opposed to the quick shoot, you know?
Right.
We said that we're going to play for 3 or 4 years and then get out. No, we're playing for our entire lives. And that's the way you and I, and that's the way I like it. That's the way we roll. I like to be busy and keep continually get better and better myself at something. And I was like always a late bloomer in my life anyway. So it's like, all right, now I'm hitting my stride. You know, when people are hitting it at 30, I'm hitting it at, you know, 50 because it's just the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to be one of those guys that are bucking the system, it's not going to last. You're going to be 3-and-out, 2-and-out, constantly fighting. You're going to have a bad attitude and you're going to get blackballed. And once you get blackballed or blacklisted, no one wants to work with you. And then life is a struggle. So at some point you got to buy into what's being said, what they want you to do. And your role changes on every team you get traded to or organization you go to. WWE was different from, you know, back in the day with TNA. I mean, not TNA, but the Monday Night Wars, you know, it's like,
yeah, WCW. Sure.
Yeah. WCW. I mean, your role was different in both of them, you know. I'm pretty sure you have more rope in one than the other. And that's how it is with team portrayed, you know, and regardless. And you're also thinking about whatever coach is coming up in there. He's trying to make a name for himself and trying to win. Your role might change too. So it's like whatever box I'm in with that team or with that coach, I have to maximize that. That's why you saw first 3 years sitting on the bench. Okay, I sat on the bench and got a championship with Houston. Then I go to Toronto, different box. You know, all right. the only thing that's working politically is for Damon Stoudamire because he was the draft pick. Isaiah Thomas was the general manager. He brought us in there and say, hey, whoever wants that second spot, go get it.
Ooh.
Right.
Yeah.
So I went and got it.
That's right.
You know, so I knew what it was like to be a franchise player and the responsibility of the top two guys on the team. It's tough. Now, the two guys on the team, you have to go appearance over here, appearance over there, charity event here, co-chairman of this charity, public service announcements, commercials, corporate meetings, meetings about the team because you're making decisions on who's going to play with you. So you have all of that responsibility. The guys that are in the middle, the worker bees, like we were most of, that's the easiest spot because all you got to do is you come to work every day, you practice, you play, you go home to your family. The ones at the end, they're nipping and trying to pull you down because they're barely hanging on. So the top and the bottom are rough. The easiest spot is in the middle.
You got those guys that, you know, the franchise player, and everybody thinks it's just, you know, roses. Like, all right, you can just, you know, you get the championship spot. I'll relate it in wrestling terminology. You get the championship matches and, you know, you're in the main events and you get the money. That starts it.
Right.
These guys do, the guys like Cena, you know, guys like The Rock when he was there, they never stopped. I mean, right. Cena was doing all the stuff with Make-A-Wish, and we talked about that. That one time I go backstage and it was at a house show and he's got 500 pictures that he's got to, you know, he's got to sign. And that's every single night because he's the guy. I remember looking at him going, make that change, man. Just keep going. He's like, that's right. Because it's not going to come. You got to keep pushing. And he would just keep pushing appearance and this. And there's no time for a family life. There's no time for kids. There's no time for that kind of stuff. I enjoyed having family time and all that stuff. I don't want to work forever. You know what I mean? I don't want to just work and work and work and work. It's not worth it to me. What am I working for? I'm working for my family. So if I can't enjoy them, why am I doing this?
Right, right. And you hit it right on the head with Cena and The Rocks. And I mean, that's how it is with the LeBrons of the world, Magic Johnsons and all, and Michael Jordans and Kobe and Shaq's and all of them. It's like, look, Shaq's on every commercial right now. He's still working.
I know. That guy's everywhere.
It's not easy, man. It's not easy. You have to, if you in that spot, there's so many people tugging at you. And if they're not tugging at you individually, they're tugging at you from your agent. They're tugging at you from the organization that you with. And they're like, okay, you got to go do this. You got to go do this. It's not easy, man. It's not. You barely have time to sleep. Shaq doesn't sleep, man. He doesn't sleep. I played on the team with him before. He doesn't sleep.
A lot of those guys are like that. You know, Dwayne doesn't sleep. You know, Vince McMahon doesn't sleep. Those guys, they sit 4 hours and they're sleep. Going. They don't sleep. They just
Kobe
go.
Didn't
you
sleep
know?
Either.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, no, those guys did not sleep. Kobe started his workout at 3:30 in the morning.
Oof.
So what time did he go to sleep? Especially if he's got a wife and kids. What time did he go to sleep? He said good night and a kid said what? 9 o'clock? So so you're up at like 1:30 going to the gym to start your 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the morning workout? It's like these guys don't stop, man.
Man, you got a 50-point game, 50-point NBA game. If you guys, if anybody's listening here, if they haven't looked it up on YouTube or looking it up on Tracy's social media, you couldn't miss that night, man. Everything I saw, it was you just at the right place at the right time. And it just at always, it was awesome, man, to see.
Yeah, that night with Washington, you know, and with Washington, I was the sixth man. And what happened with them was, there was no.
Oh, that's right.
Howard.
It was to Washington, not with Toronto.
Well, I had a 40-point game with Toronto. Me and AC Earl was the franchise leader before Vince Carter came and took down all the records. So I had a pretty big night for them too. And no one knew about the Toronto stuff because they didn't really focus on Toronto back in the day.
Right.
First couple of years.
I haven't had a 40-point game at the Y, let alone in the NBA, brother.
so that night we're in Golden State is right after All-Star break. That was the year I went to the 3-point shooting contest and I didn't do very well. That was the only time I was in. I wish I was in more, but that was only, but that goes back to the politics I was talking about.
Of course.
If they feel like I could sell units, I would have been in more 3-point contests. But the first people that was out in that contest was me, Glenn Rice, and Reggie Miller.
Oh, wow.
All of us that are capable of, you know, winning or, you know, hitting three pointers all the time, we were the first ones out. That was crazy to see you sit next to them and we're out.
They should have put a hand in your face. So they would put a hand in your face. You guys all would have been, you know.
Exactly. So I leave there kind of feeling like an all-star because I was involved in All-Star Weekend.
Absolutely.
So, it's no different than the Pan-American Games going into my junior year at UCLA. I felt like an all-star. So I show up to practice. We're in Oakland. We're going to play in an arena which I already scored 64 points in the state championship game. So I know the background. I have a swagger there. So I'm walking in early to go work out, and you got have the ushers. Oh, we don't want any 64-point games tonight. So I was like, so I'm already feeling kind of good about myself walking into that arena. And so, you know, warm up, felt pretty good, got loose. Knew I was going to start because there's no Weber, no Howard, no George Mirasan. I mean, we only had seven players, and we signed Lawrence Moulton, who used to play at Syracuse. We signed him that day. He didn't even have a name on the back of his jersey. We signed him that day. He showed up that day. We only had eight people, seven before Lawrence Moulton. So I'm going to play about 40 minutes. If I make a mistake, I'm not getting pulled out the game. So that was the most comfortable I felt since the Toronto year. And I started off a little slow, but boy, it just started clicking.
Yeah.
And then the basket felt as big as the ocean, and I don't care what shot I was shooting, it was going in.
Right.
And Rod Strickland just kept finding me. And boy, you know, one thing led to another, and it was a 50-point game.
I played against Rod one time at here in Irvine. What was it? Maybe one of the big Irvine clubs. When I say I played against him, you know, I was on the other team, but man, just on a different level, man. This guy was just, and he's not a big guy, but man, just the moves that this guy was making, just his footwork and just his drop steps. I was like, just so good. Unbelievable.
Man, that New York City. That New York City playground, you can't teach the skills that he have, man. It's just unbelievable.
I played a lot of basketball back in my day. Not anymore, but you know, in the day, I played a lot. And so I'm going to tell the story, man.
I remember.
So everybody listen. So I'm playing your game at this little, you know, probably 40 and over league, whatever it was, maybe 30 and over league at the time, I'm not sure. And you're playing with some guys on, you know, on the block and some friends, whatever. And we need one. I think we only have like five guys, and we're like, oh gosh, you know, just five. You know, these guys, I'll run up and down the court I think they're 20 minute halves, but you know, these guys couldn't. So I'm like, oh man, who we go? I asked them, should I call Tracy? And they're like, yeah, do you think he'll do it? I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm like, all right, hey, Tracy, you think you want to come down and play with us? And you're like, oh man, I played all day. I've been practicing. You're like, yeah, I'll show up. So I give you direction, but I think I give you a wrong turn. So you end up getting there at halftime. We're down by like 12. All of a sudden you come out on the court. Oh my gosh. Anybody listening, I have never seen anybody shoot like that before in my life. Anybody. You came over, you were taking two steps over half court and just boom, boom, boom. But you weren't dunking and light laying up. You were making us better. You'd say, hey, pick here, come around, dish right to us. And you just made us all better. I mean, you were just raining threes, but at the same time, you were just playing, you know? So just the legend that you are in this neighborhood, bro. And then the story with some guy tries to cover you. It was so funny. He goes up and you go to jump shot and he jumps up and goes off and you kind of dished around him and put it up and go, nope. And as it's in the air, you turn around and you're going, I get paid for this shit. And all of a sudden, boom, it goes right into the basket. And everybody's like, oh, like, oh my God, dude. We won by 20 that night or whatever, but you're still a legend around here, man. We still talk about it. Not just a legend because of the stuff you've done in high school and college and in the pros, but what you did on that high school court, our junior high court.
That night was funny because I got there and you're like, man, hurry up, tie your shoes up, hurry up, man. The half's about to start, right?
We're losing by competitive attitude.
We're losing. Yeah. You're still wrestling too, by the way. It was one of your days off. Yeah, so it's like this guy that was guarding me started talking trash.
Oh my God.
I'm like, this dude must not know who I am. So I love when people not know who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I was fresh, you know, back from overseas too. Yeah. I was done in the NBA. I was still playing professionally. These guys didn't know that. So just like you said, off. I'm like, off. I was insulted, right? So I don't know if you remember me. I was like, I'm gonna kill this dude. It's on now, Chavo. It's on. And it was funny. It was a pretty fun night.
Man, that was so much fun, bro. Just to get to play with a guy of your caliber, and just to see how good we think we are and how good we really aren't when it comes to, you know, this. And you're actually playing on the court with other guys that are as good as you are, if not better, and you're drop stepping and turn around. Well, no wonder you got to do all these moves just to get a shot.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be able to counter whatever defense is thrown at you. And I've been countering boxing ones and triangle and twos since I was in high school. So scoring the basketball has always been easy to me. And then when you have, you know, a Michael Jordan or a Scottie Pippen or Dennis Rodman, these guys guarding you, you know, and you're scoring on them.
Right.
And I'm not saying I scored on them at a high rate, but, you know, once you score some baskets on some great defenders, coming back to the gym, you know, with people you know or you know, in a pickup game in the local gym, you know, it's easy.
Yeah, yeah, so, totally.
Yeah, you just feel like, you know, then you always got that one that's in the gym that, you know, it's their gym.
There's always that guy.
So they're going to come over and, you know, this is my gym and blah, 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 blah. I was like, okay, all right, keep talking.
yeah, totally.
And then that's when it's bam, bam, bam. And it's like, you know, the dude's like, who is this dude? You know, and then somebody tells him, like, oh, no wonder, you know.
Oh, yeah. That was funny. You know, and I wasn't playing much at the time anymore. And I kind of hadn't played for years before that. But about 2 years later, the same team, like, hey, man, we need one. You want to play? I'm like, yeah, all right. So I got and go play. And I'm just going to go get a workout in, you know. We end up playing that same team. And they remembered. And, you know, there's no coaches on the team, but this guy was a player coach type thing.
Right.
And you know, we were just a bunch of guys that weren't really playing too much anymore. And they had some pretty decent players. They came out and started running the score up on us. I mean, and then they're up by 20 and a half. They're still full court pressing. Now I'm starting to get mad. I'm like, oh, now you guys are you're trying to get us back now, right? So we end up getting lost pretty good, you know? So some guy comes up to me afterwards, hey, man, nice game. I looked at him, I go, fuck you. And he goes, what? You serious? I said, yeah. I go, you know, I fight for a living. You know, you play this stupid ass game. You want to take care of it right now? And he looked at me and I go, just turn around and keep walking. He turned around and kept walking.
He doesn't know about those Guerreros in these hands.
I know, man. I feel bad, but too bad.
That's what you get for that.
Yeah, you know. So you play, man, you played with everybody. And anybody who's anybody, you've played with. I mean, you've played against, you know, Jordan and Kobe and same teams with all those guys, man. That's pretty incredible.
I feel like I played in the golden era of basketball, and it was from the Magic Johnson. The only legend that I didn't play against, that I wanted to play against in that era, that I missed by a year, I missed by a few days, was Larry Bird. He's the only one I didn't play against. I played against everybody else all the way through LeBron James and D-Wade and the Carmelo year. So I played from there all the way through today's best.
That's kind of like me when I came in wrestling. I got to wrestle with and be on the same locker room as, you know, Ric Flair and Curt Hennings and Arn Andersons and people of that age. And then transition and see the John Cena's and the Rocks and, you know, the Rey Mysterios and then the younger guys like the Daniel Bryan, the CM Punk's come up. So I got to kind of play against and wrestle with all of those guys. I mean, that's pretty, it's character building a lot. It's career building, you know?
I think we went through our golden eras at the same time.
I think so.
Wrestling and basketball. I think it was the same time. How about looking at Dominic out there now?
Dominic Mysterio, right?
He was a little dude, man, in the back when we were all hanging out, you know?
That's right.
He was always around, and now to see him in the business, man, I'm really happy for him and his dad, man. I mean, you know, Ray's always, you know, come on, man, he's our guy too. You know,
so, yeah, for sure. It's really cool to see that. Happy. Doing something with him and using him, and you know, hopefully it continues. I know that sometimes in wrestling, you're the chosen one for a minute, and then they put you to the side, you know. But I told him just enjoy it, man. Enjoy it. You're getting out there, getting some great experience. You're wrestling some top guys right off the bat, you know. So learn how to do it, because eventually you're going to be in that position trying to make other people look good. So learn your craft with these guys. You see how it's done from the best right now. Mm-hmm. Learn from them.
Right, absolutely, and I've always wanted to ask you this question, because you've been in the business a long time. Who are some of the guys or gals that you trained or that you helped along the way? Because you have a wealth of knowledge. You come up with your family, your dad, your uncles, everybody, man. It's like, God rest Chavo Classic, God rest his soul.
Thank you.
It's like you are the Guerreros, the great Guerreros, and you have all this knowledge in the business. And who are some of the guys that are on that level now that you guys have trained or you have trained yourself?
You know, so not that we actually sat and, you know, took them from not being, you know, walking on the street to being wrestlers, but just dropping some knowledge on them and passing on what we learned to a lot of the guys was guys like Cena when they first came out, you know, guys like, you know, CM Punk. And then a lot of the new guys, like I got a lot of the new guys in Lucha Underground, like Pentagon and Phoenix. And these guys were already really good, that we just started showing them how to be great and how to put what they know of the Lucha Libre style and put it into the American style a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of those guys that we've been able to pass on some Guerrero knowledge to, you know, a little bit. There's a lot of stuff that we save that we don't give out,
right.
You know, but there's a lot of those guys, you know, for sure that, you know, like a Randy Orton and stuff, you know, being a few years older than him, you know, I was able to, you know, not teach him, but, you know, give him a couple of things, and then he took and ran with it. The guy's just incredible. You know, he's better than all of us. Batista and all those guys. You know, like them, we were able to help them, I guess, a little bit in a sense. You know, they went off and you know, strive to greatness on their own. But, you know, just a couple little tidbits of knowledge for sure that we were able to give to them.
But a couple, you know, a little tidbit of knowledge from you guys is a lot. You know, you got to look at what you've done in the business, your tradition from your family, what you guys have done in the business and the knowledge that you've given, I don't care if it's that much. It's a lot. It can take you over the top to where you may be stuck in one area.
Yeah. Like you and I know, just that little advice, it doesn't seem like a whole lot coming from somebody to us is a game changer. It's a life changer. We'll just make everything click sometimes. So I hope that I was able to give that on, pass that on to somebody that, you know, things have been passed on to me, but there's just those one little thing sometimes that, you know, for instance, Fit Finley, one time I was wrestling, he was an agent of my match, and man, I just felt real sluggish that day. And I don't know if it was the end of a tour, you know, like a 4-day tour or something. I just felt like I was just out of it. I just wasn't I didn't have that power, that quickness, you know? So I ended up wrestling Shannon Moore. You remember Shannon Moore?
Yeah.
A friend of mine, we got in the ring. And I was just slow and just, God, I felt almost lethargic. I got in the back and Fit comes to me and goes, Chavo, great match. I was like, I started laughing. I thought he was joking. He goes, no, Chavo, you really slowed down and you took your time and you, everything meant something. And I was like, really? And he's like, no, it was great. You're finally slowing it down and you're really getting the people get with the match. And you're not just going to the next spot or doing something next. You're letting everything materialize and settle. And I was like, like, wow, I thought that I felt so slow and so sluggish. And I was like, ah, that's what I need. That's the speed right there. I'm not saying that we don't change gears and go faster sometimes and, you know, go from first gear to third gear to sixth gear, but you can't stay at sixth gear all the time because people can't relate to that. So just that little tidbit of knowledge that that Fit gave me, and I don't even know if he even, if I ever told him or he even remembers, but that changed me right there in that day.
Well, I tell you what, and just noticing, you know, because I watch Lucha Libre all the time. Of course, you invited me down to Lucha Underground. I really appreciated that, you letting my son come in there and hang out with everybody. I do notice that Lucha Libre is faster. It's more boom, 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 boom.
Yes.
And WWE is a little bit slower. You know, boom, boom, boom. Uh-huh. You know, let people react to different things, and you know, I guess you tell your story, and then over here is this boom, 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 go, go, go. And yeah, I can see where you have to combine the styles and understand this side and understand that side, and those who can get both. Like some of those wrestlers you mentioned, like Pentagon, I'm watching them in AEW now. It's like, to be able to have met them in Lucha Underground and to see them, you know, to see progress, those guys progress and get better. And I know you got to feel good about that.
Oh, absolutely. There's like, I almost feel like they're my kids a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but I had a little small piece, and then there's a couple other people, like, you know, of course Conan and Vampiro and stuff, and had dropped knowledge on those guys for sure.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I definitely see that it's just like my when they succeed, I feel like I'm succeeding, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
I feel cool, the same. I feel the same way about, you know, like if you look across the board in the NBA and you look at how many Canadian basketball players are in the NBA now.
Yeah, right.
I look at those kids, most of them are from the Toronto area. Mm. I look at those kids and they remember me when I play. And I look at those kids and I call them Raptor babies because where they didn't think they had a chance or a shot in hell at making it at some point, you put a pro team there, and now you see the development of all of these guys, and now they're taking over. You know, Jamal Murray is one of them. No, he's not mine.
Yeah.
but you look at him, he's on a high level, you know, and you're seeing other guys come up in there. And, you know, Steve Nash is Canadian. It's like you see all of these guys come into the league, you know, and do great things, man. I feel like a proud papa, just like you do when some of the guys that you may have pulled to the side, put an arm around, and now you're seeing them do their thing.
It gives me some pride to see those guys do well and you know, continuing the sport. I love the business. You know, I love wrestling, really, really love it. So I like to try to give back to it and not just take from it. I definitely like to drop some more, you know, knowledge, things that have been taught to me, and pass that on. You know, that gives me joy for sure.
Definitely. I understand. I'm right there with you.
Right. Same thing. Yeah. Now, were you a wrestling fan as a kid growing up?
I wasn't until my cousin.
Until your cousin.
He took the Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant days. He took over the TV on Saturday mornings. And I'm like, man, why are we watching this? What is this?
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden you sit there and watch it and it grows on you and you understand it. And you're seeing guys getting hurt for real. And you're seeing guys athletically put their bodies on the line. And you're seeing stories being told. And you're seeing and you're understanding what's going on out there. Now I'm drawing in just like he is.
That's right.
You know, and now, you know, you guys are doing your thing on Monday Night Wars. And I might be in Washington or playing for Denver or somebody or Houston. And I'm calling my cousin on Monday nights. And we're talking about what you guys are doing out there. You know, but that started when I was 12 and my cousin was like 8. He, you know, he had spinal bifida. So grandma was like, he controls the TV. He watches. Okay, we'll watch what he want to watch. And if it wasn't for him, I might not have even been exposed to wrestling. So I just thought that I was put in position as a basketball player to make it and be able to introduce him to his heroes.
Yeah, you know,
that's what I was able to do with you guys and him.
That's awesome, man. He was a good kid too, man. I like talking to him. I mean, a kid, but he's our age, but he was awesome, man. And, you know, got he's looking down on us for sure, you know?
Yeah.
I know he is. Good man. One thing that I definitely think that, that you get, and a lot of the great ones do get, is the relationship to other pro sports that wrestling has, is the entertainment value. You can be, you know, once you start making a dollar for a sport, it's not a sport anymore. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, and even though it's a sport, but at the same time, if people aren't paying for it, it doesn't matter, because, you know, and I use the WNBA sometimes. Every one of these girls can go out there and whoop my ass on a basketball court. I mean, they're so good. But because, for sure. Because their audience isn't so huge that you have in the summer, these girls are going to Europe to go play just, you know, to keep food on the table. And it's nothing against them at all. Just I'm saying that how they get eyes have to stay on them, you know. And it's the same thing with wrestling. Like, if you could be a best wrestler in the world, but if no one's paying to see you, it doesn't matter. And in basketball, it's the same thing. The guys, the greats, they understand that entertainment value of it. You know, Jordan, he got that putting asses in the seats didn't just mean scoring points. It mean being that showman and, you know, dunking and having that tongue out and his persona. Look at Dennis Rodman, who got it. You know, Dennis Rodman, he's the guy that was already a great basketball player. I mean, he was, you know, Detroit and winning championships, but didn't become that Dennis Rodman person until he started dyeing his hair and just started, I don't give a shit about anything. And then had that persona come out, you know.
Throwing his jerseys in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time he got kicked out, he throw his jersey in the crowd. Yeah.
That's right. You know,
he understood it. He understood it, yeah. Absolutely.
And that's, you know, instead of just being a member of that, you know, Piston team, that great Piston team, he became his own entity, you know, his Dennis Rodman. Everybody knows Dennis Rodman, where a lot of people, unless you were a fan of, you know, the basketball back then, you can't name all five of the Pistons. I can, but, you know, a lot of people, my wife can't, but she knows Dennis Rodman, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely. He's been in your neighborhood.
Isaac Thomason, yeah.
But see, the thing about those guys, and they understood this. I started understanding it when I was in Toronto. When you're out on the floor, you know you're going to be out on the floor. People coming to see you play. You're going to play 25, 30, 40 minutes a game. Now you can start appealing to the fans. So it's like trying to get to that point. It's like, I got to stay focused. Okay, the only thing I can really do to the fans is sign autographs before the game and after the game and take pictures with them. But if you're playing a lot of minutes and you're doing your thing and you're one of the guys, now you can go to the guy in the front row and start having a conversation with him during a free throw. You know, it's like, these are things, you pull people in by being able to connect with them around the court while playing. Right. Now, if you have that short leash, you can't do that because you come into the side before you can even get going. But you know you're going to be out there. That's when you can build that fanfare around, you know, especially around the front row of those people who are paying a lot of money. And then that's when you're going to those appearances and you're able to reach everybody now. But it's like you understand that when you're one of the guys, now you can relax a little bit and have a little bit of fun with people in the front row.
What do you do outside of the court, out of playing basketball? What are your hobbies?
Well, outside of being a TA for my kids' classes right now.
Yeah, besides being a teacher, a homeschool teacher.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I love to play golf. I did go out with my dad yesterday and we played Royal Lynx. He's got a little group that he plays with, you know, all the guys his age and you know, so we went out to Royal Lynx yesterday and we played. That course is tough, man. But I love to play golf. I love being around my family, trying to, you know, we go on family bike rides and stuff like that. I love coaching AAU, my brother's program, Prodigy. I love helping them and, you know, helping develop some of these kids to help them get their college paid for, teach them and mentor them about life and using that orange ball to advance their life, to, you know, not start your life in debt. You get your scholarship so you don't have that student loan debt coming out that right. most regular students have. Take advantage of, you know, yeah. be a good student and, you know, so you can qualify for college and then use that basketball talent to get a scholarship. You know, I love mentoring kids. I love staying in touch with today's time. I'm a music lover as well. My son and I, we mess around with the beats. When I needed a little bit of peace of mind when I was playing,
yeah,
I had equipment. I had a little studio and I used to do it back then. Now that my son has that interest, I'm starting to get back into it again and start, you know, doing beats and putting him in touch with some of my entertainment friends so he can go sit in the studio and learn with some of these guys. And so that, and
so making and, music.
Yes. Music That's producer, awesome. Yeah, doing man. Beats and stuff like that. So he's doing that. And I love, you know, doing that with him when he's with me. And then now, you know, I'm just trying to get help. Me and my partners, we're trying to get global sports television off the ground. And we're going to have, you know, different sports that we're going to have, you know, we're going to concentrate on basketball at the beginning. And then we're going to introduce football, introduce baseball, introduce soccer.
Awesome.
But it's going to be globally. Yeah. We're not just concentrating here domestically. We're, you know, because there's a lot of people that live here that go play overseas and they're never even seen and no one knows what they're doing over there and they have family here. Why not broadcast some of their games over there and bring it back to the States to where their families can see them play? So we're trying to get that off the ground. I think we're pretty close to doing that. And then my other partners with the Elite Pro CBD oil, we have ointments, we have oil. We're about to launch that as well. So that I've been busy with
CBD
that.
CBD is hot
so,
right now, yeah.
Yeah, and it works. You know,
it does work.
I mean, I never thought that I can get back on the floor with a hip replacement.
That's
you
true.
Know, I've been out there with my daughter helping her train. I get out there and mess around with those kids that we coach. We get out there and play for them I might practice with them. Or, you know, I never thought I can be this active again with a hip replacement. So that CBD oil does wonders, man.
Was that the same hip as you were a kid?
No, it was the other one. Overcompensation.
The other one.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
That became the power leg. That became my dunk leg. Yeah. So, you know, everybody's like, man, why do you dunk left-handed when you're right-handed? That was the reason why, because the power in my left leg wasn't the same. So I had to transfer my mind to go off the right leg and dunk. And then that became the wear and tear leg. And then I ended up having an arthroscopic hip surgery on that one in 2000.
Yeah.
2002, right before I came to the Lakers. And I kind of got off to a slow start with the Lakers because I was still recovering from that. And then 7 years ago, I got it replaced. So, you know, that's, I never thought that I can feel this good and be this active at almost 50 with a hip replacement. But that CBD oil works, man. And ours is no THC. So you're not going to be high while doing it, you know? So,
well, then I don't want to use it then.
Well, that's where the cannabis comes in, right?
Exactly. For my glaucoma, only for my glaucoma.
but yeah, man, I mean, there's wonders in that cannabis yeah. world and you know, CBD world and you know, growing up playing in the NBA, you know, and I think you knew this about me. I didn't take a drink or smoke no type of weed. My first drink was 34. My first puff of weed was like 36. You know, and it was after wow. I was done. It was after I was
yeah,
done. I didn't cheat the fans.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to make sure they got their money's worth. And then I was like, okay, now what's the big idea with this stuff over here? Let me see what it's all about.
Right.
And, you know, now I have an occasional drink and every now and then I'll, you know, have an occasional, you know, blunt or whatever.
But, yeah, same thing. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's like, you know, the CBD stuff. I mean, I take my drops every morning and you know, you don't test positive in drug tests with the CBD oil with no THC. So, you know, I mean, that's a good thing that we have going on.
Yeah, I'm definitely a believer in the CBD. I have the, you know, a lot of the creams, the ointments, yes, some of the drops, you know. I definitely want, we'll talk more about that because I want to get some really, really good stuff.
And I've got some stuff coming. I got some stuff coming, and I'll send it to you.
Sure, definitely, and I'll definitely tweet about it and stuff. What kind of music do you like?
I like all music, you know. And when you have a production mind, you got to be open to everything. You know, you got to be open to everything.
Yeah, you listen to it differently, right?
Yeah. I listen to it, and okay, how do they do that? Ooh, wow! Did you hear that sound in the background? You know, it's like, I listen to it differently. I still love my, you know, 80s R&B, 90s R&B. I love my 90s hip hop. I love my funk from back in the day, the 70s funk. You know, that's my go-to where I just want to just listen to music. But I listen to everything. I listen to today's hip hop, today's R&B, even though they're trying to blend it. You know, they got to find a way to keep that separate because you're going to eliminate a lot of jobs if you're trying to, you know, join that genre together. You know, they're trying to join it all into hip hop. And, you know, I listen to jazz. I listen to country. I listen to rock. Come on. I mean, half of you guys' entrance music, you know, that you guys have all come out to, you know, it's like some of that back in the day I wouldn't have listened to, but because of who you guys were and your instrument, and then it becomes catchy.
Yeah,
you know, totally. And then you know, hell, I mean, it from 85 through 89, I went to Glendora High. So it was a new wave generation then. That's all they listened to was new wave.
K-Rock was all K-Rock.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're listening to Richard Blaine and...
absolutely, on MTV, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Poor Man and all those guys at...
Downtown Julie K-Rock. Brown.
Yeah, for sure. We used to listen to all of them and, you know, be like the Cure and, you know,
The
Smiths. Totally.
Yep.
We still listen to that stuff. I still love that stuff. And we always go to the Jazz Fest.
Yes.
Together, my buddy Richard Sherman at Omega Events has that.
Hey, Rich was on that team.
he was. That's right. The team that you came and lit it up. Yeah, but he's a good guy, man. He's always, the concert and, you know, sports events all kind of shut down because of coronavirus. You know, we got to get him back going and support him. So Omega Events, anybody's listening, definitely got to get out there and listen to their concerts because they put on good ones for sure.
Yeah, they put on great ones. And you know, I've been to plenty of them. So I'm looking forward to going back.
Yeah, now you love coaching too, right? I mean, I know I've seen you on the sides when you were coaching with the Lakers and stuff, and I went to the Lakers game and I texted you. I said, I see you.
I was coaching with the Lakers in 2015. I was a shooting coach. So Kobe last year, you know, that 60-point game he went out with was awesome. I'm glad went out like that. You always want to leave a good last impression. And he left. You know, so he left saying he was the GOAT, 60 points on the way out, you know, and
that was
one of the greatest exits I've ever seen, you know, from a business or going into retirement. And, you know, to be able to go back there, I played with him in 2002 and then to coach him and be a little bit closer to him because he hung out with the coaching staff. He was a lot older than his teammates. And, you know, just to be able to rekindle that friendship again before he passed, it was a cool time. I did coach in the G League. I coached in the WNBA with the Tulsa Shock with the legend Teresa Edwards. Hall of Famer. And she's got a wealth of knowledge. And I was able to also parlay that into broadcasting. So I've been with UCLA for the last 11 years. As their radio analyst. So, I went to broadcast school while coaching in the G League. And I was like, whatever one hits first, that's where I'm going. So,
And then you do some stuff with, ABC?
Yes, ABC 7. We have the Slam Dunk Show after the games on Channel 7 with Rob Pukazaki, Michael Cooper, Norm Nixon, Delisha Milton-Jones. You know, that's everybody I worked with. And we have a good time on that show. It's kind of loose. But you tell them what happened during the, you know, Coop is a character on there. And then to be able to work with somebody that I looked up to and who was a mentor my whole life, to be able to work with him now and on TV, you know, right. That's, you know, a lot of family catching up in the green room before we go on. So, yeah, we have a good time with that.
I want to pull up his suit pants and see if he's still got them long socks.
He probably does.
Remember, he always had those really long socks? Those really long
really
socks.
Really long socks go right, right up to his kneecap.
Yeah, that's right. That's funny. You've kind of been on the road as much as the wrestlers. So what's your favorite city to work in?
Toronto, hands down. Those fans, I had a hand in educating those fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was there at the beginning. I was on the free throw line one time, and you know, when you're on the road,
that's where I first met you backstage. I first met you backstage at, I think, the Air Canada Center.
Yeah. I mean, there, then not too long after that, it was New Jersey. I mean, it's like maybe a couple of weeks passed by and we were playing New Jersey, Brooklyn now, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was hanging out with you and Eddie in the back over there too. But back to that Toronto store, I was on the free throw line. And they would have these poppers in the back, and they were weighing them when I was shooting the free throw.
That's right.
And we're at home, and you're not supposed to do that. So I was smiling and while laughing while shooting my free throws, and I'm not the free throws. So the first question I get when I get in the locker room from the press is, what were you laughing at the free throw line? I said, well, education number one for the fans around here. I know you guys are hockey fans. Basketball fans, we do not wave those at the home crowd. We wave them at the other team. So,
because we want them to miss. Yeah, we don't want you to miss.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, there was a lot of educating the fans that I did
through
the media at that time that I really enjoyed and I had fun with, and I was able to reach out and touch them and actually kind of talk to them through the screen, and you know, sometimes in person. And so, I mean, that city is unbelievable with their support, you know, and their. You know, their knowledge came along later. And look at the type of fans they are now. Look at Jurassic Park when they're playing. It goes absolutely crazy.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got some ties to Toronto also. The first time me and Eddie, we had tagged once before in WWE, like 2 weeks before, like a Velocity or like the pre-show, whatever it was. They just wanted to see what we could do. You know, we did pretty decent. And then I get to Toronto and I see Eddie, and he's actually on Raw, but they put him over to SmackDown, and he goes, me and you tonight. I said, me and you tonight. Oh, okay. Cause you know, he was privy. He was, you know, the bookers would talk to him and stuff. And I was still young in the business. So I go, what do you mean? He goes, we're tagging. I go, awesome. He goes, main event of SmackDown against Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. I'm like, oh my gosh, what? Okay, let's do this. And then that's the first time we tagged against those two. We just had a great, great match. We came back and Kurt Angle comes to me and goes, what the hell was that? I go, what do you mean? And he goes, you guys kicked our asses out there. I'm like, well, you're going to kick our ass, right? He's like, well, yeah. we beat you to it. And he was like, man, you guys were just on a roll. And that's my tie to Toronto right there, man.
Well, I'll tell you, that means you guys tore the house down in that Velocity, you know,
and
Vince is smart, man. You know, he's no dummy. He wouldn't have been in business long if he wasn't smart. He knows talent. He knows how to get people over. He knows who the good workers are. He put the good workers in there with the good workers and created a great match. You know, Vince has always been smart when it comes to doing things like that. You know, his creative genius with you guys is unbelievable.
One thing that many things I learned from Vince, but one thing I did definitely stuck with me is that one time he told me, he goes, you know, I failed more than I've succeeded. He says, I've had a lot of crash and burns and stuff that just didn't work. But when I succeeded big.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he was telling me, don't be afraid to fail. Go out there and succeed, because you're going to succeed big. You know, you're going to have some failures, and that's okay, but you're going to go out there and succeed. So he's a smart man.
That's a rule in life. I mean, for everybody, if you're scared to fail, you will not succeed, because you're always scared to take that next step. I don't care if it's business. I don't care if it's sports. It's all the same. If you're afraid to make that leap, then you're not going to succeed, because you're going to be stuck in that quicksand that you're going to be running in the whole time. You got to sometimes just say, all right, if I fail, fine. If I don't, and I think athletes understand that more, because we all do fail more than we succeed. We do. You know, they look at all the successes, but how many times did we fail from kid all the way up before we became consistently good and consistently succeeded? It was a lot of fails on the way.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. How many shots have you had, and how many have you missed? They remember those the ones that you made, you know?
Right, absolutely. Kobe missed a lot of them before he made them.
That's right.
You know,
that's
and right. people
and even while he was making some, you miss them, yeah.
Right, absolutely. I've done it. You know, we've all done it. MJ's right. done it, you know? So
that's right.
I mean, you don't become great unless you fail. You don't become that's great right. unless you go right through that obstacle that's in your way. If you're scared of that obstacle, you're never going to get by it.
Yeah, anybody listening, you take that. Don't be afraid to fail.
No,
all the greats fail before they become great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There would be no Guerrero beers if you weren't afraid to fail.
That's right. You're right. That's because right. right. Those Guerrero's Mexican failures, lager would not be around.
There you go. Yep. I mean, there would be no, no producing hit shows. You know what I mean? You right. put yourself out there with, you know, Glow and everything else. You put yourself out there like, okay, I'm going in. I may not know everything I'm doing right now, but I'm going in.
That's right.
I'm going in with the intention to succeed. But if I fail, at least I learned something while failing. Now, if I get put in that situation again, I already know where I failed at, and I'm not going to do the same.
Right. I ain't scared. Let's do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to be a risk taker. And you are that, Chavo. Yeah. You definitely that. I salute you and everything that you're doing, brother. Everything that you're doing.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. We always end suplexes and cervezas with some rapid fire questions. So they're just real quick questions, and you know, and there's no right or wrong answer. You answer how you want. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. So are you a new cars or vintage car guy?
I'm a vintage car guy.
Nice. What's your dream car?
Dream car.
And it doesn't have to be a vintage, you know, but what's your dream car? If you could get a car right now, what would you drive?
I like that new Phantom that's out, man. That new Phantom is gorgeous.
Oh yeah. Beautiful. Gorgeous, don't you? I know. Yeah. That Phantom's nice. That's balling right there. That's high balling.
Yeah, that's
right
balling. And that's balling out of my budget.
Well, you know, if you see me driving around down the road in a Rolls Royce, you're going to know that I've probably got like $80 million in the bank.
Yeah,
there's no way I'm going to spend that money on a car that's not going to be worth much in 10 years, you know. MMA or boxing?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Back in the day, I would say boxing. Today, I would say MMA.
Ali or Tyson?
Iron Mike, that's my man.
Nice.
I got to go with Iron Mike. That's my man. Your man
nice,
too.
Nice. I just did a commercial with him. Yeah, the Smart Cubs commercial. And he's what a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
Tyson
a good guy.
Ranch, check it out. Good stuff.
Yeah, he is a good guy
for sure.
Real good guy.
If you weren't a basketball player or a fan, would you rather watch football or baseball?
Football.
Are you a movie? Are you an old school guy or The Hangover?
I'm an old school guy. Hangover is hilarious, but I'm an old school guy.
I know, right? I love it. Frank the Tank. Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair?
Woo!
Ooh, yes.
Okay, I got to go with Ric Flair, man. I like Hulk.
Sure.
I've done some charity events with Hulk. Hulk's a good guy. But Ric, man, he just all around to me. He was just all around entertaining. On in and out of the ring.
Yeah, I agree. Randy Savage or Ricky Steamboat?
Oh, shoot. And that was a rivalry, too.
I know.
Ooh. God rest Savage's soul. I love Steamboat. I love him. Love him to death. But I'm going Savage.
Gotcha. Savage. Okay. NWO or D-Generation X? That's Monday Night War Central right there.
It sure is. And you know what? At that time, I was Team WCW. They were bringing it.
Right.
But the NWO got oversaturated. It kind of spoiled it for me. So I would say the Generation X.
Yeah. NWO, I should say, like NWO, like early NWO.
Yeah.
I got to change that question because
early NWO, you know, with NWO.
Right, right. What DX did right was not have 5 million members.
Absolutely.
There was like a few in it, and they stayed there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, when you got Scott Norton and Buff Bagwell joining, it's like, all right, we're doing too much. Now you got Virgil joining. It's like, it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yep. Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Stallone. I can't Summer have a Olympics? Trump, they were chasing me the whole time.
Right, yeah, yeah. Summer Olympics or Winter Olympics?
Summer Olympics.
Summer. That being said, is it a woman's beach volleyball guy or a woman's gymnastics guy?
Gymnastics, because I support the women's gymnastics team at UCLA. I'm really good friends with Coach Val, and I really appreciate what she did with those young women. I was really good friends with the with the gymnastics team as well as the volleyball team in college, but more gymnasts and definitely gymnastics team.
Cool. Eddie Murphy or Dave Chappelle?
Dave Chappelle.
Sugar Ray Leonard or Marvelous Marvin Hagler?
Ooh-wee. That's a tough one. That was a real tough one right there, but I'm going to go with Ray Leonard. Leonard.
All right, right, Sugar Ray. Nice guy. I saw him not too long ago, and I swear he looks the same. He doesn't age.
He does. All he does is golf.
Man, he looks the same. I mean, his skin is like, man, are you doing that Botox or what, man? It's perfect. He didn't get hit.
He stayed away from that. He kept moving. Yeah.
I know. And last one, are you a boob guy or a butt guy?
Butt guy.
Yeah, legs. That's what definitely, I am, too.
Definitely. Definitely a bug guy.
But brother man, it has been a pleasure talking to you and catching up and having to do this interview as a interviewer and as opposed to just a being on the phone and rapping.
Oh yeah, I mean, Tom, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for, you know, it's an honor, man. You know, we've been friends for a long time, and when you asked me to be a part of your podcast, man, you know, it's truly an honor because I don't take our friendship for granted. And I also know, you know, the level of person I'm talking to here. You know, you're a Guerrero. You've done, you know, you put the crown on you guys' head for what you guys have done in the business. You know what I'm saying? And your reputation of being a professional and everything. And, you know, I'm not taking for granted where I am on this podcast. So I really do appreciate you for thinking about me in this way and bringing me on your podcast.
Hey man, I had a pleasure just talking to my friend for sure, man. Where can anybody find you right now? What are you up to and where can they find you?
Well, right now I'm just helping my brother with AAU teams while the COVID is going on. Cause we're all just trying to stay out the way until things clear up a little bit. But I've been active on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook during the playoffs. So you can catch me Facebook at Real Tracy Murray, on Instagram at Real Tracy L Murray, on Twitter at Real Tracy Murray. I've been pretty active recently, especially last night. Really active last night. Yeah, they got to stop flopping, man. I'm getting tired of flopping and going let's go to the monitor to see what happens. If it wasn't no flopping, you don't have to go to the monitor. So they got to clean that up.
Right, right. I agree, man. Again, brother, it's been such a pleasure, Tracy. We'll get back out on that golf course soon and go hack it up.
Yeah, I look forward to it, man, because you really turned it on that back nine, like you said. You turned it on that day.
My body starts working all of a sudden, man. If I don't go out and hit like, you know, like 100 balls before, it takes me a while for my body to start being, my hips start moving and start all forming as one and not have my arms, my hands do all the work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Golf is just a different beast, man. You can't power that ball and you can't use all arms. It's got to be a whole body, turn your shoulder thing and come through with the body type of deal. I mean, if you want consistency, otherwise that ball will fly all over the place.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Like in any other sport I play, you kick it harder, you throw the ball harder, it goes harder, it goes faster.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
In golf, it's not. The harder I hit it, it doesn't go as far. It's the weirdest thing.
It is. I mean, if you're not careful, it'll go 2 feet in front of you. You hit a worm burner. But yeah, it's a smooth swing. It's a swing all the way through. It's follow through. It's just consistent fluidity throughout the swing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Again, Tracy, it's been a pleasure, man. Great talking to you as always. I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Thank you, brother.
We'll be texting, commenting on each other's pictures and go from there, brother.
Definitely. When this thing clear up, man, we're back out there. Or whenever we can, wherever we're in town with each other, man, we're back out there.
Sounds good. Love you, brother.
All right, talk to you soon. Love you too, brother. Take care. Right.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Get his pedal, not Charlie. Charlie.
Slow your roll before I bounce on your head like a 64. See, good game beats all game. That's why I'm calling out busters and calling out names. Take a shot of Guerrero Tequila. Then I start wrecking shop like Bon Jovi. Step pa' atrás. Like Roberto Duran, you'll be staying on my. Round the outside, see round the outside. If I don't catch you here, then I'll see you outside. Then I'll Snoop Dogg you and drop you like a hot. And break your ass off like a crooked ass cop. See, this is the part where your face beats the ground. Step up, jump up, and get beat down. Knuckle up and boogie, let's get down. Get down. Knuckle up and boogie, get beat down. Beat down. Knuckle up and boogie, let's get down. Get down. Everybody gather round. Get his pedal, not Charlie. Charlie. Your summers can't move me, vale. Vale. Get his pedal, not Charlie. Charlie. You know that I'm down for the highlight. From the bottom to the top and top to the bottom. If you want connections, Mexicans got. Bring the heat like mad or when they do the rhythm of a beat. I wear my bandana like a king wears a